This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The U.S. Senate Wednesday overwhelmingly approved a non-binding resolution to end U.S. military support for the Saudi-backed intervention in Yemen, a four-year conflict with against Shia Houthi rebels. Senator Mike Lee co-sponsored the measure.
U.S. intervention in Yemen is unauthorized, unconstitutional, and immoral, and we must not our involvement and our support of Saudi Arabia any further.
The 63-37 vote came hours after Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and his defense counterpart Jim Mattis urged lawmakers to avoid cutting U.S. assistance to Riyadh. Pompeo called the Senate proposal ill-timed, coming ahead of planned peace talks in Sweden.
It would encourage the Houthis. It would encourage the Iranians. It would undermine the fragile agreement for everyone to go to Sweden and have this discussion.
A similar measure failed earlier this year. This vote was taken in the wake of last month's murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has repeatedly denied ordering the killing, but the Central Intelligence Agency concluded otherwise. Defense Secretary Mattis insisted there's no direct evidence of his complicity.
We have no smoking gun that the Crown Prince was involved, not the intelligence community or anyone else. There is no smoking gun.
Pompeo said degrading ties with Riyadh would be a grave mistake for U.S. national security. He described the Gulf Kingdom as a powerful force for stability in the region and a counterweight to Iran. The U.S. military said Wednesday it killed three militants in an airstrike targeting the al-Shabaab insurgency in Somalia. The strike was carried out Tuesday in the center of the country. It's an area struck last week by U.S. warplanes and said to have killed dozens of al-Shabaab extremists. This is VOA News. Russian President Vladimir Putin Wednesday defended the decision of his armed forces to seize three Ukrainian Navy ships in the Sea of Azov Sunday, calling the Ukrainian action a provocation. He also denounced Ukraine's imposition of martial law, calling it politically motivated ahead of next year's election. In the Ukrainian city of Mariupol, an anti-Russia protest was held. Participant Galina Ognarov demanded Russia return the 24 sailors it captured, give free passage to Ukrainian vessels, and appealed for international support. President Donald Trump Wednesday expressed his deep concern over the matter in a phone conversation with Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. In the Macedonian capital Skopje, several thousand protesters marched Wednesday against the government of Prime Minister Zoran Zaev for his support of a deal with Greece to change the country's name. Changing the name from Macedonia to North Macedonia is controversial and must be approved by a parliament. If approved, Athens has promised to allow its opposition to be removed for Macedonia's bid to join NATO and the European Union. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani Wednesday announced formation of a 12-person team for prospective peace talks with the Taliban during a meeting in Geneva, where European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini spoke of something new that's happening.
President Ghani has put on the table a courageous peace offer to the Taliban. It is a unique opportunity to break the stalemate and to move the country forward.
Hopes have increased. The 17-year conflict's end could be in sight. Meanwhile, in Kabul, gunmen attacked a British security contractor compound Wednesday, killing at least 10, wounding twice that many. Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan Wednesday expressed hope for better ties with arch-rival India. His remarks came as a new border crossing in Punjab province was officially open. Mr. Khan said if India takes one step forward, we will take two. The two nuclear-armed countries have fought three wars since independence in 1947. Sri Lanka's most senior military official appeared in court Wednesday, charged with helping another suspect in the abduction and disappearance of 11 youths during the country's quarter-century civil war. The defense chief will still face detention until December 5 as the investigation continues. And the U.S. Embassy in the capital of Democratic Republic of Congo will remain closed through Thursday, at least the fourth day in a row, following what it described as credible and precise information about a possible terrorist threat coming amid presidential election campaigning. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Opposition protests resume today in Togo to demand political reforms.
We have always had peaceful protests in Togo, and we'll protest as long as people will not respond to our expectations.
Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson is the coordinator of Togo's main opposition coalition. Gambia's Faraba Commission report faults the police for the killings of three environmentalists in June this year. A new report accuses Kenyan police of rape during that country's 2017 post-election violence. And Liberia's former vice president endorses the setting up of a war crimes court in Liberia.
I think a war crime court may be able to make people know that if you take on powers that you believe you have, you should be able to account for them. So if the people of Liberia want a war crime court, I will support it.
Joseph Boakai is the immediate past vice president of Liberia, and a women's hip-hop group in Senegal is working to record a new album ahead of next year's presidential elections. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nationwide protests by Togo's 14-party opposition coalition and civil society groups resumed today, Thursday, to demand political and electoral reforms. The protests began last year to demand the resignation of President Fornas Simbe, but were suspended to accommodate mediation by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. Earlier this week, the opposition announced it will boycott the December 20th general elections. Bridget Ajamagbo-Johnson, coordinator of the main opposition coalition, says the purpose of the new protests is to stop the December 20th election until the Togolese government institutes necessary constitutional reforms.
The purpose of the protests is that we want the regime to stop this electoral process. We are still asking for constitutional reform. You know that ECOWAS has appointed a constitutional expert to help us to draft a law for us. It has been done according to the terms of references, but the government doesn't want to use this draft. They are trying to draft another bill themselves, and it does not respond to people's expectations. So we are still asking for a reform that will meet people's expectations. And we are asking for the release of those who are in prison.
When the protests first began, Bridget, part of your demand was that President Fornas Simbe should step down. Are you still making that demand?
People are still expecting that he will leave power. We don't want this regime again. And we understood that ECOWAS, in order to have change, is proposing us to go through democratic and fair election and to start by legislative election. So we are confident that if we have democratic and transparent election, they will lose power.
The government security minister said that to demonstrate is your democratic right, but that the government hopes that you do not destroy the voting booths and or the ballot boxes.
He knows that we never destroy public goods, and we also expect that they will not introduce people who will destroy what they are talking about.
Are you not concerned about the possibility of violence?
We have always had peaceful protests in Togo.
And how long do you expect to carry these protests on? How long?
Well, we have a program and we'll protest as long as people will not respond to our expectations.
Bridget, thank you very much. It's so nice to talk with you always.
Thank you very much.
Bridget Adamagbo-Johnson is coordinator of Togo's main opposition coalition. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. Liberia's immediate past former vice president, Joseph Boakai, says he will support the establishment of a war crimes court to hold people accountable for alleged gross human rights violation and war crimes during Liberia's 14-year-old civil war. He said, although he has always wanted a truth and reconciliation commission, a war crimes court will make those who committed crimes to account for their crimes. Also, and in this exclusive interview with viewers Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia, the former vice president says he's available to give his expertise to the George Weah government if he's called upon to do so. Mr. Boakai expressed dissatisfaction over allegations of corruption in the current Liberian government.
I think when the people make a decision to elect a president, they do it with expectations. When I turned over the office of the vice president to Vice President Taylor, we turned that office intact, everything unexpended budget, and she even inherited some of our staff to guide her through. The purpose for that was to show that we were not there to set trap for anybody, that we intended the country to move in a direction that is supposed to benefit the people. So for me, piece of advice, anything. But I'm not going to impose on anybody whatever that you ask me to do. And I will always promise you that I'll give you the best in the interest of our country.
There are already some alleged malfeasances taking place, the issue of corruption. What are your thoughts on these issues?
This life here, we all say God brought us to leadership. But we also have to know that leadership carries responsibility, to the people. And that we will wish that people who come to position come there with an intent to better the conditions of the people. So when these kind of things surface, people owe it to the public to explain what has happened and to be able to remedy that situation. Because every dime that escaped from the people retard development. And if we condemn corruption, we should show that we actually mean it.
A lot of people are still speculating that you have an intent, you still have an eye on the highest seat of the country.
I'm the standard bearer of the former ruling Unity Party. The election of a standard bearer is for 6 years until another election. So I'm still the head of that political party. Right now, my attention is to provide those services and help people to be able to improve their life. In fact, what I'm doing is to actually buttress government effort.
Do you still want to be president of Liberia after 6 years?
I am not going to talk about presidency. I'm going to talk about leadership. I have said over and again that something I've learned, politicians do things for the next election. Statesmen do things for the next generation. My interest is in the next generation. My intention for this country was that we will go the path of the South Africans with true reconciliation. But I've come to learn that impunity, when people do things wrong and they never repent, it will appear that other people will begin to imitate them. I think a war crime court may be able to make people know that if you take on powers that you believe you have, you should be able to account for them. So if the people of Liberia want a war crime court to be able to bring about, we have given so many years that people who felt that they have done something wrong consciously will come and begin to do good things. But instead, some of the people still want to lord it over the people. So perhaps they need to come and justify their case. So if it was a war crime court that will do that, I will support it.
Joseph Boakai is Liberia's immediate past former vice president. He spoke with viewers Moses Gaziewu in the Liberian capital, Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 29th. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 15 minutes past the hour. In the Gambia, a commission of inquiry set up by President Adama Barrow to investigate the killing of three Gambian environmentalists in June 2018 published its findings yesterday, Wednesday. The commission called for the prosecution of five members of Gambia's police intervention unit, including some civilians, for their roles in the destruction of properties during the sand mining dispute in the Faraba Banta region of the Gambia. Pandere Umbai files this report.
Ibrahima G. Sankara is the spokesman of the Gambian government. He addressed a news conference on Wednesday about the outcome of the Faraba Commission.
On 18 June 2018, there was a tense standoff between the police intervention unit, the IU, and residents of Faraba Banda village in the West Coast region of the Gambia regarding sand mining activities in the village by Julake Quarry and Mining Limited. The standoff led to an eruption of violence between the said residents and the PIU, resulting in the deaths of three civilians, serious injuries to some civilians and PIU personnel, and the destruction of properties in the village.
The Faraba Commission was headed by Gambian human rights lawyer Emmanuel Jove. The commission has blamed the personnel of the Gambia Police Intervention Unit, PIU, for the killing of the three unarmed environmentalists. It also says the PIU officers fired shots at the villagers without the approval of the police command. Abubakar Tambedu is Gambia's justice minister.
The commission has found that while there was no proper coordination of the operation by the police on 18 June 2018, no orders, and I emphasize, no orders were given by the police high command to shoot at the crowd. In essence, the police intervention unit personnel who fired at the villagers did so without lawful command and acted alone.
The Faraba sand mining dispute has resulted in the massive destruction of properties. Dozens of people were injured and hospitalized. Some of the injured victims are still seeking medical treatment.
The government accepts the recommendation of the commission in this regard as contained in pages 47 to 52 of the report and has consequently taken measures including the following. One, that criminal prosecution be continued against ASP Musa Fati, PC Musa Baji, PC Nuha Koli, and First Class Momodu Z. Jal and Superintendent Babakar Cham for the deaths of Bakary Kujabi, Ismail Abba, and Amadou Jao.
The commission recommends for the suspension of some staffers of Gambia's geology department for their role in the incident. The affected staffers have been suspended from work for 6 months without pay. It also recommends for the firing of the Faraba village head, including the dissolution of the village development committee. The Julake Engineering Company has been banned from mining sand from the site for now. The government also says it will provide financial compensation to the victims of the incident. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting.
More than half of the sexual assaults that occurred during the 2017 Kenyan general election were committed by the police and other security officers. This, according to a report by the Kenya National Commission on Human Rights. It reveals that 54% of assaults were committed by men and women entrusted with protection of lives and property in the country. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the National Police Service has refuted the commission's claims, arguing that the victims did not report the alleged crimes.
Speaking in Nairobi yesterday, Wednesday, Kenya National Commission on Human Rights Chairperson Kagwiri Mbogori said that 96.26% of the post-election violence victims were women, while about 4% were men. Kagwiri says the sexual crimes committed during the post-election violence period were rape, gang rape, attempted rape, defilement, attempted defilement, and sexual assault.
The Kenya National Commission on Human Rights recorded a total of 201 sexual cases that emanated from the 2017 electoral violence. The 201 sexual violence cases are not in any way exhaustive or conclusive, but they are a record of survivors who courageously shared their ordeals with us.
The Nairobi City County had the highest number of violations recorded, followed by Kisumu in Western Kenya. According to the Commission's Vice Chairperson, George Morara, the violation took place in areas where most poor people live.
We're calling upon His Excellency the President to acknowledge and, on behalf of his government, issue an unreserved apology to the survivors and their families, and make a commitment to support their necessary reparations. We are also requesting His Excellency with utmost urgency to establish a commission of inquiry on sexual and gender-based violence so that we get to the bottom of this matter.
Kenya has an elaborate Sexual Offences Act, but most criminals of rape and defilement walk scot-free due to destruction and lack of evidence. Senior human rights advisor to the United Nations resident coordinator in Kenya, Marcella Favreto, has called on the Kenyan government to implement the commission's findings as well as provide support to the victims.
So the recommendations touch on the prosecuting perpetrators of gender-based violence, including the one that took place in 2017, and ensure full implementation of the Waki Commission report, ensure adequate provision of reparations, and provide support, including psychological and physical support to women victims of such violence, and ensure a human rights-based approach to law enforcement during elections, and issue strict guidance on the protection of women and girls.
Refuting the report, the Kenya National Police Service has accused the Human Rights Commission of making sensational allegations about the police without any actionable evidence. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
The government of Rwanda says over 1,000 ex-FDLR combatants were forcefully repatriated from the Democratic Republic of Congo. They arrived in Mutobo camp in northern Rwanda last weekend. Rwanda considers the FDLR to be a terror group composed of some former Rwandan soldiers and other officials who served the pre-1994 regime that prepared and committed genocide against the Tutsi. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
They repatriate the ex-combatants and their families fled to the Democratic Republic of Congo when the President Habyarimana's regime was overthrown by the Rwanda Patriotic Front, which is now the ruling party. The government of Rwanda alleges that after perpetrating genocide against the Tutsi in 1994 and being defeated by the Rwanda Patriotic Army led by President Paul Kagame, these ex-combatants took by force millions of civilians to form a revenge group in exile. The Rwanda government says this repatriation is the result of the Rwanda Refugee Cessation Clause, which expired on 31st December 2017. According to the clause, and beginning January 1st, 2018, Rwandans who fled the country between 1959 and 1998 were to lose their refugee status and require no more international protection. If the refugees did not want to repatriate to their country of origin, the country of exile would have the option to forcefully repatriate them. There's a former combatant at host in the Mutobo camp in northern Rwanda. By observation, the majority of them seem to be old. Many have injuries and handicaps caused by several battles. They confirmed to VOA that they were forced to leave their camps and that they were afraid when they found themselves on Rwandan soil. We are very afraid. We are forcefully chased because they brought us tied with the ropes, thinking that we are sent to be killed. Many of the former ex-FDLR combatants don't even know their places of origin. I don't know where I fled from. I was a kid. I can't even remember the relatives I left behind here. I don't know if they are still alive. I'm praying that God can show me my family. According to Serafine Mukantabana, the chairperson of Rwanda's Demobilization Commission, those who will not remember their origin, the government shall provide plots of land at the end of the reintegration process. These are the Rwandans that are coming back home. Let's hope that many will find their families that have land, but they have the rights to their country. We share the land as it is so that no one can find where to live. The Democratic Forces for the Liberation of Rwanda, or FDLR, is an armed labor group active in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The 1,000 ex-combatants and others who returned in the past years passed through a transition camp where they underwent reintegration courses to bring them up to date about a country they lost contact with for a quarter century. Eugene Wimana for VOA News, Kigali.
A women's hip-hop group in Senegal, Ganji Hip Hop, is working to record a new album ahead of next year's presidential elections in the country. Founded only in 2016, the group has helped encourage women to join the hip-hop milieu, an influential cultural space during Senegalese elections. A spokesperson for the group, Zena Faye, who is a rapper also known as Lady Z, talked to Ricky Stryak about how they are increasing their numbers in a traditionally macho environment.
We are in a fairly matched environment with men who have always thought that hip-hop belonged to them. But nowadays, women are becoming more prominent and are doing a lot of things to help advance our urban culture, our society. For Senegal, it's a boon, an unexpected advantage, and it proves that we evolve on the cultural level. So for tourism, we are among 60 women in Dakar and in some regions and soon abroad who are photographers, managers, graffiti artists, animators, singers, rappers, slammers, DJ and so many others. And we realized too many things.
Do you think women in hip-hop have increased their numbers since you guys began your group? And what does this mean for hip-hop in Senegal?
For Senegal, it's a boon, an unexpected advantage, because we realize too many things like days of barter, exchange of objects and knowledge on three occasions at MCU, on the role played by women in this society, as well as that in the cultural environment, what it undergoes, shooting sessions, documentary film screening, the release of a single with...
When was the single released and what was it about?
We did it last year. The single is... We talk about women in the society, our work, our courage, etc. It was with 90 artists, female rappers, singer, beat maker too.
Do you think this can help in other areas of women's rights? Just women feeling like they can speak up for themselves in general, women feeling like they can have more choice about their lives.
Yeah, politically, things are preparing. I just give you an example. I did a featuring with Human. I don't know if you know him. And OMG, talking politics from several angles, because we are, after all, citizens and have the right to give our opinion on the issue. You will have more details at the exit of the product. It will be for 2019, perhaps at January or February.
By product, do you mean song?
It's a song, yeah. It's a song. It's an exchange.
Do you think now, since Ganji Hip Hop has been created since the last election, you will be able to speak up about women's issues? You will have a bigger voice about women's issues?
You talk about our voice or the politics. That's it. It's about children, it's about women, many things, our place in this society, women in family, for education.
That was Zena Faye, a founder of Ganji Hip Hop. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Senegal's capital, Dakar. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa News. Nationwide protests by Togo's 14-party opposition coalition and civil society groups resumed today, Thursday, to demand political and electoral reforms. The protests began last year to demand the resignation of President Faure Gnassingbé, but were suspended to accommodate mediation by the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS.
That's it for this Thursday, November 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Want to relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music. And Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.